You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavor swirling together with cold brew, topped with a velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. And that imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Two Chairs No Waiting, episode number 462. Margaret Carey Interview Part 2. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the folks over at WeaversDepartmentStore.com. Head over to Weavers and check it out. Hey, it's the new year and everybody's been working out, so head over and get a Body by Barney t-shirt. That's right. It's time to show off your Mayberry body wearing this great t-shirt, Body by Barney. Also, head over there and check out the Mayberry postcard set. That's new. Not to be confused with our note card set, but head over to WeaversDepartmentStore.com and check out those great new items. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. The executive producer of episode number 462 is Paul Mulick. Thank you very much, Paul. Thank you for being here. It's always great to be in Mayberry again with you. I'm Alan Newsom, your host for Two Chairs No Waiting, and tonight we're going to have part two, as I said, of our Margaret Carey interview. This was recorded back in October of 2017 on the Mayberry cruise. It was in a theater full of people there on the ship. And so you'll be able to hear the noise of the ship a little bit in the background. But it is an amazing interview. Now, I don't think you have to hear part one before you hear part two. But if you'd like to, you can pause now, head over and listen to part one, and then come back and check them both out, because I know you're going to enjoy these. Now, Margaret Carey was on the Andy Griffith Show twice as two different character names, Bess Muggins and Helen Scobie. Basically the same lady married to the same man, but they had different names somehow. I don't know how that happened, but it did. And Margaret is a wonderful lady. She was also the live action model for Tinkerbell in the Peter Pan movie by Disney. So she has had an amazing career, and I know you're going to enjoy this. So we're going to have an interview with her and then follow that up with the bonus of the This Week in Mayberry History by Randy Turner. So stick around for that after Margaret's interview. This is fairly long, so we're going to get into this really quick. So Margaret, I'm going to let you take it away. So here we go. So back in this same time frame, this is the picture I was telling you about at dinner last night. You were voted as the best legs in Hollywood. Is that correct?
A friend of mine, and I didn't have too many because I went to a girl's school and worked all the time, but anyway, her name was Bee, and she wanted to be in this contest, and she didn't want to go alone. So we marched out on the stage, and there was a filmy thing that dropped down to about here, and then the judges were to look at our legs. Well, the pastors in Hollywood were not happy with that, so it never went on. But I won, and Bee never spoke to me again. It's the way of the world, it is. But it's those are just little side things that happened. To the main thing was that I married the associate director of the Charlie Ruggles Show. He also was the associate director on the opening of Disneyland, and which was a huge project. I lost him after 37 years, and then about 4 years later, I was over at the cemetery, Forest Lawn, and I found my darling second husband. And that's the place to meet them.
Oh, that's great. So, you talked about doing voiceover work, and one of them I remember is as a young child, we had a local television host that in the mornings would show cartoons and stuff like that, and one of them I remember was Clutch Cargo, and I didn't realize that you had done the voices on there, and not only you, but you were Spinner and Paddlefoot. You were both of those voices, which is the little boy and the dog. You were the dog as well on Clutch Cargo. And then Hal Smith was
Swampy.
Was Swampy.
And everybody else.
And the narrator, and he did all kinds of stuff. So you want to talk about this for just a second?
I'd love to. All right. one of the things, I may jump ahead of you, I'm sorry if I do, but one of the things I'm going to tell you a little quick story about that may hopefully entertain you. I'm going to do something that's politically incorrect. Now, you promise not to tell anybody, because at the time, dialects were just, everybody loved them. You could do a dialect story at all. So how do you learn a dialect? And I will give you a little idea. That Hal would be over here on this side of the microphone, and I'd be here, and I get the script, and I said, Hal, I have to do a German accent. I've forgotten, or I don't know how to do it. He says, you step over here in the corner with me, and I will show you how to do a German accent. I said, okay. He says, you need a sentence. I said, I need a sentence? He says, yeah. And my sentence is, she was looking out the window when I saw her. I marched back and stood in front of the microphone, and I was doing a German accent. No problem. A little bit later, a couple of weeks later, he said, you don't know this. Most of you have a Southern accent, right? Okay. Did you know that when you're doing a Jewish accent, it drops into a Southern accent? And you can't get out of it. It is just amazing. So he says, I can't get out of this. I don't know. I said, step over here, Hal. So what you do is you put your voice way up in the corner, up here, and you take all of the vowels and you change them all around, and then you use a lot of phlegm. So he came back and he could do a Jewish accent. At one time, I was the only female in all of Hollywood who could do a Scandinavian accent. I don't know why it was so hard. I did about 21 different ones. And I would like to tell you a couple of stories. These are funny stories, so you can laugh. I just want to let you know. Well, you've got to let an audience know what's going on. When I was adopted, I sort of knew I was Irish. And when I started entertaining, there was an Irish story that I always told. When I found my family after 50 years, and I did, I found my biological family. Wonderful. I found out I was Scots-Irish. And so I love to still tell this story. It brings back memories. And this is in an Irish a pub. And everybody's standing around talking to each other, you know. And one says, I don't know about this diversity. Diversity, you know. And the other one says, I don't know whether I would like to have been born an Italian, you know. I like being you would have loved it. I would have. You certainly would have. All the girls would have been after you. Oh, really? Oh, he says, let's ask Paddy what he thinks. So they walk over to where Paddy's sitting there knocking back a few. And they said, Paddy, he says, what is it? He says, what would you be if you weren't Irish? Paddy says, I'd be ashamed. I have told that story since I was 17 years old, and it turned out to be true. I love being Irish. I love visiting there. It is just a great place. The other thing is, I'll tell you one other story if I have time. Here's another dialect. Now, let me tell you about dialects. As I said, 21, and I had different voices. I was spinner. Gee, what do we do now, Clutch? 7-year-old boy. I played the witch. Yes, I certainly did. I get calls at Halloween, could I do it? And another one that I was famous for that I got called for. little baby. All you have to do is do a meow like a cat, and it works, but nobody ever figured that out. Anyway, this is a story about over in England. Now, the dialects are not true because they would be too thick. You couldn't understand them if you had. We call them broadcast quality dialects. So don't hold me to this one, but I love this one. So, there are two twits sitting on a curb over in London. And one looks up at the sky and he says, "Ow, see that up in the sky up there, that circle, you see that?" Leo says, "Yeah, I do." He says, "That's the moon." And the other one says, "No, it's not. It's the sun." He says, "No, that's the moon." And these two buffoons sit there arguing with each other, and suddenly they look up the street, and walking towards them is a Dowager Duchess. She is gorgeous. She's walking down with her cane and so on. He says, "I know. I'll ask your ladyship. You'll know." So he pops up and he comes up. "Begging your pardon, your ladyship." She says, "Yes? What is it?" "You see that circle up in the sky?" "Yes, I do. What about it?" "Is that the moon or the sun?" "How should I know? I don't live around here." Those were the fun kind of things, and every time I saw Hal, every time I saw him, he would have a new story for me, and I would have a new story for him, or we would say, "I heard that one," but we'd still tell it.
That's great. So, Clutch Cargo is—it was filmed. And when they filmed this, watch the little clip we're going to show here. The drawings—it was a cartoon, but to save money,
static drawing.
Yeah, static drawing. They didn't really move, but to save money, as they did it, they actually would video or record your mouth.
Film them. They would project it on.
They would film her mouth or the mouth of the actor and put it onto the cartoon drawing. So if you watch, go ahead, Mike, and hit the
Clutch Cargo with Barry Spinner and Hanover.
Our scene opens on an old deserted hangar near the little Midwestern town of Weedsville, once the center of busy flying activity. Some say the place is haunted. Few remember the legend of its colorful past. Who was that? Is that the ghost of Weedsville Airport?
And this is the same kind of air circus announcement they used to have 30 years ago.
Yeah, and that old handbill smells kind of musty, too.
It must be some kind of a joke.
So as you can see, the mouths are moving. So the dog, they didn't record your mouth, I noticed.
Yes. We recorded which brings me probably out of whack of what you almost said. But you start out with the track. And whenever you record, if they match as you go along with everything. So we would have certain sentences that from the script that we would redo and be filmed doing it with white paint around us that matched a mat that the camera was taking a picture through. So all it saw, and then they could project the processed film back on to the face. And if I may, you would never think about this, but we're back to the Andy Griffith Show and the Lone Ranger Show. I don't think, you know, we would sit there and watch all of this, but you never think about what it is to get out a new show every week. If it's animation, we have 17 weeks to lead to get it, turn a show out. But it isn't that way with a straight filmed show. You start out with a script. That script has to be okay. That script has to go to all the different departments. Do you need a squad car? Are you going to be interior only, exterior? How many drivers do you need? What do you need for, if you bring a squad car in on the set, you need to get the fire department to give an okay. All of these things. How about wardrobe? How about casting? How about all of those things? I mean, it's just amazing that it gets done. When I was doing the Andy Griffith Show, it was so interesting to watch Andy Griffith stand there, and you could almost tell from the way he stood that whether he was talking, they were talking to him as a producer of the show, making decisions, or whether he was the actor. It was just fascinating. And Don Knotts would usually move away off the set, out of the lights. We were the A team, and the B team were the stand-ins. Yes, you have to get stand-ins too, all of this. And you have to get, if you have children, you have to get teachers. It's just an amazing undertaking, and a show a week. And so Don Knotts would move out of the light, go sit down in the high director's chair, take a look at the script and know what was coming up next. And then he would just dream off into the distance. And it happened over and over and over again that when they would call the A-team and we all took our places out in the, and when Don Knotts would hit the lights on the set, he would say something hilariously funny. Break us all up. I mean, just stand there. And Andy Griffith just loved it more than I thought. That was his second job. I really did, to make us all very, very comfortable. So anyway, back to the other one. After you get all of that in the camera, it was a little stronger with the Andy Griffith Show that we came up with the right lines. In the Lone Ranger, if you got close to what the line was and it made sense in the script, you printed it. I mean, you just didn't have time. We did the whole interior of the Lone Ranger with the horses, with the scene out in the desert. Everything was on one sound stage so that you could get that show done. So it gives you a little bigger feeling of what we went through and how these producers went through and how the directors went through to get this work done. It's an exacting business. It's a delightful business. It's a crazy business. And when you're working with Andy Griffith, it's a fun business.
So another cartoon that you did in the same, well, we're going to hear it, the Andy Griffith Show. So we're talking about the Andy Griffith Show here. So so that was a perfect lead-in to that. So this was your first time on the Andy Griffith Show, and the Christmas episode. Go ahead and go through one. There's, I think, I got several pictures of that. So there she was, locked up in the jail cell. And so your experience on the Andy Griffith Show, you've already described a little bit, but did you feel welcomed and everything?
Well, there are some different ways of going into a show where there is a core group of people that are there every week, and you could be excluded, not unkindly, it's just the way that they work, or included. When you walked onto this set, you were part of the family immediately. You were included. It was as if you were going to be there every week with them, which is a lovely, lovely feeling. Sam Edwards was such a delight. Of course, you saw him on every television show that ever happened. He was just the all-around actor that was there. But here's a little idea of inside of an actor and the kindness and the give and take. If you remember in the scene where I come running in to the jail and I gave him a big hug, it just, nobody told me to do it, I just did it. It just seemed the right thing to do. And when that was just a run-through kind of thing, and the director, Bob Sweeney came over and said to both of us, we're sort of standing there, he says to Sam, keep the hug in, I really, really like it. And here was a wonderful thing from an actor to an actor. Sam said, oh, it wasn't my idea, it was Margaret's. But he gave credit that he was just a delight to work with. And most everybody was a delight. There were only a couple of people in my entire life I said, I never want to work with again. And with all the hundreds of people I've worked with, that's pretty neat.
That is neat. So, go ahead, Wayne. I think there's... So you were in two episodes. So this was we're showing the Christmas episode pictures here. Now these are the colorized versions. Just so you guys know, when they colorized this episode, they actually used photographs that were taken on set, and the dresses and the clothing and all that stuff, they used those color photos to to match the colors. So these are actually what it actually would have looked like. Well, it looked like to you, I guess, when you were recording. But in color. So they did a pretty good job on the colorizing. Go ahead. And you were also in this episode, which came later, where Ben Weaver was going to evict you from the house. And in those two episodes, they changed your characters' names. I don't know why they changed them.
Because they didn't know. They were not that organized, I'm told. Right. You know, nobody went back. Again, you had to turn out a script. And it took 2 weeks to do a script. You got it done. Hey, that sounds good. Nobody went back and checked. Almost episode. At least that's what I was told.
Right. Well, they had different writers, and the writers didn't coordinate. It wasn't as big a deal back then because you would watch an episode one time, maybe in a rerun or something, but then nobody really expected that, you know, 50 some odd years later, we're all still watching these every day and then talking about them on a cruise ship. Nobody really thought this would happen. So this was your time on the Andy Griffith Show, so we'll move on. Space Angel was very similar to Clutch Cargo. They did it the same way. And what was your character's name on here? Do you remember?
Crystal Mace. And I had these wonderful lines like, "That's a good trajectory, Scott." Or those wonderful lines like they had in Star Trek. You know, where, "Be careful, Scott." I have to tell you, I think the star of Star Trek, William Shatner, is a great actor. Anybody who could say the same lines over and over, "He's dead, Doc," you know, or "Are we, send us up, Scotty," and give it some kind of drama, I just think he's marvelous.
So let's we've got a little clip for this, too, because I'm
Angel.
So this was in the early 60s. And Hal Smith is the Scottish engineer on here. So that's Hal Smith's voice notice. He's one of the grandparents.
You can signal from master control, Scott. It must be the chief.
Right, Crystal.
That felt like an elephant was standing on my middle. That's enough of that for one day.
Horace, you're just getting old.
So those are just a little clip of that. Some of these things I was able to find on YouTube. That's where I was looking around finding these. Yeah, so
it was... looking on YouTube. it has been told, I don't know whether it's true, that Star Trek Roddenberry got the idea of perhaps doing a Scotsman as the engineer from Space Angel. We have a lot of people at Pixar that love this kind of work, and they do salutes to them all the time.
Wow. That is cool. So it was really fun, as I said, going through all the career. I didn't realize that you had been, and you've already spoken about it a little bit, she was in the new Three Stooges, and it was Mo and Larry and Joe Derita. Is that the right one? Curly Joe Derita. It was later on after Curly and Shemp, they had already passed away. So go ahead. We've got a little clip of this, too.
Oh, how do you do, ma'am? We're the Livewire Electric Company at your service.
Well, I didn't expect three of you. It's just a tiny little buzzer that doesn't work. It's very simple.
Well, that makes us even, so are we. Oh, you've heard the old saying, many hands make light work. So you just buzz off and we'll have your buzzer buzzing in a jiffy.
And a quick jiffy, too.
Well, all right. I'll be in my office. You call me if you need me.
Yes, ma'am. Let's go.
Pardon me, miss. Please. We have work to do.
There we are.
See here.
This wire goes right through the wall here. I'll take it on the other side. Pardon me.
Wait a minute. Come on. I've got work to do.
You on the other side, Fairly Joe?
Yeah, I'm over here, Mo.
Okay, I think I found a wire.
I think I got it.
Oh, what is that here?
Larry, give me a hand here, will you?
Okay.
Now, wait a minute. Now, give me a... What?
So you did a lot of episodes of this with them, and as you said, I think if you go to the next picture, I think, yeah, there's Eric.
Eric
in his football uniform with the Three Stooges. So how were they to work with? Did you enjoy working with them?
They were so, what's the word I want, so professional. You know, the scene that you just saw him, Mo Howard, pulling on the string. He finished the shot, finished it, and looked up, and his hands were all bloody. They had tied down the electrical wire, and when he pulled it out, he had ripped his fingers. But he finished the scene. It was an education to work with them, and they were dear. And the other thing you might know, when Mo Howard, when we went out to lunch, would comb his hair back from his face, many people didn't recognize him, but he loved that.
Wow, that's cool. All right, so let's go on to the next. So as we mentioned, we're wrapping up here. Margaret has a website that's called Tinkerbell Talks. It's got all kinds of stuff about Tinkerbell on there. And I think there's another slider, too. And she was talking about that the other night. She lives near Walt's barn and goes there. Here's her book, Tinkerbell Talks. And
you can get it on my website, and I will ask you to take out your photo, your phones, and then put down TinkerbellTalks.com.
Yeah, TinkerbellTalks.com, and you can order it from her website. It was too heavy to bring with her on the cruise. It was too heavy. And she also goes to Walt's barn, and she and Eric were telling me about it last night. We got about 5 minutes. We can still wrap this up here, I think. But you were telling me a little bit about this the other night, that you go there and...
I am a volunteer at Walt's barn. Now, what is Walt's barn? It is the barn that was sat on the backyard of Walt Disney's home. And when he died, and they sold his home, his daughter, Diane Disney Miller, didn't want it to be destroyed. So they moved it over to Griffith Park and dooted it up, and it's a museum, and it's where he built the work tables that are there. His desk is there, his chair, his shaving cream is there. It's the essence of Walt Disney. And then Disney came and made a mini park around it, and we have other things that are there. It's on the third Sunday of every month. It is the only free Disney event in the world. And yes. And it's 11 to 3. And as I say, I'm a volunteer. And at my age, what they do is they give me a little duster and say, you could dust those two things and then, you know, leave it alone. But it's an incredible place to see. It is the essence of Disney. And now there is a, not really a copy, but a salute to the barn near Tampa, and they just flew me out to there to cut the ribbon. It's the same idea of these people love their miniature trains, and they have track that you can ride the train, that they have 22 minutes of the little train, and you could see Walt Disney's train, and then the one in Tampa, you could ride the 13,000 feet of tracks there also. So it's Carroll Wood Pacific Railroad. Carroll Wood was the street that he lived on, and he named his railway Carroll Wood. So that is Walt Disney's barn, and we love it, and we look after it. So when you come out, try to make it that it involves the third Sunday of the month, and just toot yourself right over to beautiful Griffith Park, which is the largest city park in the United States. It's where the observatory is and the zoo is.
All right, well, so what do you want to thank, Margaret? I don't think I've got anything else on there.
Any questions?
So our time's almost up, I believe. Have you got any prizes you want to give away? the next one. Good. Good, because I was afraid we'd run out of time. Margaret, is there anything else you'd like to tell everybody?
I would like to thank you for your attention. This is a really weird room to work in. You have just been a lovely audience. You just never know what's coming up. I hope I covered some of the things for you. Some of them I went way out on a limb, but I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed talking with you. And I tell you, being with the people in Mayberry on Saturday, my son has written a beautiful poem. It's about the Christmas show. And on Saturday, I will read it to you. And then I think he's going to play a song about Mayberry on Saturday. So I didn't do it this time. So you just take my heart. And it was the good Lord that gave me all the wonderful things to work in. And certainly the Andy Griffith Show is right at the top of the list because it's wonderful. People love it. And your heart goes out to it. And I thank you for being Mayberrians.
Yeah. Let's give her a big hand, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Margaret.
All right. So there we go. That was the interview, part two, our final part with Margaret Carey. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Margaret has had such an amazing career. Her life in general has been amazing, and she tells some great stories. Now, her book, you can head over to Tinkerbell Talks, the website, the link's in the show notes, but it's tinkerbelltalks.com, and pick up her book. It's a big book. It's it's 420 pages or so. And it's pretty heavy. That's why she couldn't bring it on the cruise. Didn't have it with us on the cruise to sell it. But you can order it from her website. You can get either a regular version or a signed version that she will sign for you. Anyway, so hey, I hope you guys enjoyed that. Again, there's lots of links in the show notes for her stuff. So head over there and check it out. All right, folks. Finally, for this episode, to wrap us up, we have got a great report from our friend Randy Turner from over at the Gomer and Goober Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild. So let's let him take that away. So here we go, Randy.
Welcome to This Week in Mayberry History, a report by special correspondent Randy Turner of the Gomer and Goober Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild of the Mayberry Historical Society.
The lovely Arlene Galunka was born in Chicago on January the 23rd, 1936. She has had a long and successful career, though she is best known to Mayberry fans and non-Mayberry fans alike as Millie in both The Andy Griffith Show and Mayberry RFD. Of Polish descent, and with a last name that is as far away from the beauty of the actress as one could imagine, Galunka is Polish for pig's knuckle, Arlene began acting while in her early teens. She graduated from the Goodman Theater program in Chicago, and when only 19, began doing summer stock productions. She moved to New York and continued her studies at the Actor's Studio, studying under such legendary teachers as Lee Strasberg and Sanford Meisner. And indeed, while Arlene is often thought of as a comedic actress because of the success of her two Mayberry series, she is a fine dramatic actress as well. Her first Broadway appearance was in 1958 in a show that unfortunately closed after only 5 days. But the following year, she found more success. She made her television debut in the New York-based anthology show, The United States Steel Hour, and appeared in a second, far more successful Broadway show, Take Me Along, starring Jackie Gleason. It was a hit show and ran for over a year. After the show finally closed, Arlene appeared in another TV series filmed in New York, and then had another successful run in the hit Broadway play by Neil Simon, Come Blow Your Horn. Arlene never missed one of the show's 677 performances. By 1963, Arlene was a member of the famed Second City Improvisational Theater Troupe's New York branch. She continued to appear in series and a soap opera and made her film debut in a small part in a Natalie Wood movie, all filmed in New York. Arlene stayed in New York for several more years, appearing on Broadway in several more shows, most notably as Candy Star in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest from 1963 to 1964 with Kirk Douglas. She also was part of the cast of a top 10 comedy album called You Don't Have to Be Jewish, released in 1965. Arlene moved to Los Angeles in 1967 and found immediate success. That same year, she appeared in a feature film western starring Henry Fonda and guest starred in The Flying Nun. But more importantly to us, she was cast as Millie Hutchins, a new employee at Boisinger's Bakery who had just moved from Mount Pilot. She immediately caught Howard Sprague's eye and appeared in the Andy Griffith Show twice, first as his girlfriend and then as his fiancée, though they did not go through with a wedding. After appearing in projects such as a two-part storyline in Get Smart and with Clint Eastwood in Hang 'em High in 1968, Arlene was cast in the spinoff series Mayberry RFD, now called Millie Swanson, a role she played for all three seasons of the show. Even though her last name was different, she was clearly the same character that had appeared in the original series. She still worked at Boisinger's Bakery, and in the second episode of Mayberry RFD, there was even a reference that she and Howard used to date. After her time in Mayberry ended, Arlene continued to have an active career. She added voiceover work to her resume, voicing the regular character Debbie in the cartoon Speed Buggy in 1973, and has done much voice work over her career. She began acting on the stage again in the 1970s in California, including starring in a 1972 regional tour of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. She has appeared in more than 100 films and TV series, as varied as MASH, to All in the Family, to her last appearance in 2005 in an episode of The King of Queens. She continued to teach acting for many years and is now happily retired. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. And remember to take Andy's advice and go out there and act like somebody.
Thank you, Randy, for that great report on Arlene. I got to meet her myself. She was fun to meet. Folks, if you enjoy Randy Turner's reports here, you can join over at the Gomer and Goober Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild. Gomer and Goober, yeah, over on Facebook. If you go and search for that on Facebook, you'll find it. He's posting a weekly report there as well. So if you want to make sure you get it, you can email him at turnersgrade@gmail.com. And he will get you signed up on his mailing list so that when he posts there on the Gomer and Goober Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild, you'll get an email making sure you don't miss it. So turnersgrade@gmail.com. Folks, I want to thank you for being here in Mayberry with me to this episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. I know I always enjoy getting to spend a little bit of time here with you. And I would love to hear from you. You can give me a call at 888-684-8415. Let me know how things are going for you. Tell me how you're enjoying the show. If you got some Mayberry gifts at Christmas, I would love to hear them. Maybe you didn't get them at Christmas. Maybe you just got them at some other point. I'd still like to hear from you. Send me a picture of them. Even better, I can show them to folks here on the podcast or post them on our Facebook page. I'd love to hear from you. 888-684-8415. Head over to twochairsnowaiting.com, click on the contacts button, and you'll see it there. Folks, if you enjoy the podcast by video, I want to ask that you subscribe to our YouTube page. Please click the subscribe button. I need to get some more subscribers. Folks, have a great week, and we'll see you next time. Night, everybody.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.